This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the premier law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Reston, Virginia, but serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about OF&P, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com or give us a call at 703-218-2100 to speak with one of our many attorneys in areas as diverse as corporate, business law, divorce, real estate, litigation, international, and intellectual property, among other areas, and real estate. I think I mentioned real estate. Anyway, I also invite you to tune in to my blog, which has articles, audio, and video of interest in tax and estate planning. And you can download some of the audios from past shows on Blueprint for Wealth, or watch some videos of interest, or just read articles on estate, tax, and business planning topics. And lastly, please read my column in the Washington Business Journal entitled Blueprint for Wealth. Today, we're going to conclude our discussion, a very complex discussion, but an interesting one on private equity funds. What's a private equity fund? It's where you take money, invest it into a fund, which may be a limited partnership, that then takes the money and invests it into private companies, portfolio companies that may be in a special industry, technology, real estate, or it may be across a variety of sectors. Now, I'm going to give you an example of how a private equity limited partnership works. I was mentioning last week that when a limited partner or an investor in a private equity fund puts money in, decides to invest, no money changes hands initially. In fact, the limited partner merely agrees to commit a certain amount of money, capital, to a limited partnership. That partnership is managed by general partners. In doing so, the LP, limited partner, signs a legally binding commitment to contribute capital to the fund whenever the GP requests it, up to the point where the limited partner's size of the capital commitment is then reached. For example, let's say we've got a large, fictitious, institutional investor called Global Opportunity Corporation, and that company has agreed to invest with a private equity firm called Rock Street Partners. Rock Street's raising a $1 billion private equity fund, and Global Opportunity agrees to commit $100 million out of that $1 billion to the fund as a limited partner. The fund eventually gets commitments adding up to the $1 billion and additional limited partners besides Global Opportunity. The general partners of Rock Street now have $1 billion in what we call dry powder to deploy. The Rock Street General Partners finds its first deal, which will require, say, a $50 million equity capital investment from Rock Street. It makes a capital call to the limited partners, requiring them to transfer to the general partner an amount of capital equal to their pro rata share of that call. Well, Global Opportunity said it was going to commit 10% of the fund, so it has a $5 million cash call that it has to make and contribute into the fund. A year later, Rock Street does another deal, this time requiring Global Opportunity to send in $10 million. Over a total of 5 years, the investment period that is actually specified in the limited partnership agreement, a total of $100 million is drawn down from Global Opportunity Corporation and invested in various Rock Street deals. Meanwhile, the first investment done by Rock Street turns out to be a huge success, which we all hope is the case in all private equity deals. The general partners have managed to grow the value of this $50 million initial equity investment into $150 million in just 4 years. This progress is only calculated as an unrealized return because the investment has not yet been sold or exited. In other words, none of the partners in the fund have received their money back yet. Happily, after 4 years, Rock Street sells the portfolio company to a major international corporation and gets the $150 million return in the form of cash. This now is counted as a realized return because the investment has been liquidated and the general partners now have cash on hand to distribute out to the limited partners. Because the first deal has generated a profit of $100 million, which is $150 of the proceeds minus the $50 million initial investment, it means that the general partner gets a 20% carried interest or $20 million of distribution out to the general partners. The full $50 million from the initial investment is returned in a series of distributions to the limited partners, including Global Opportunity, along with $80 million in profits after the general partners have taken out their carried interest. For Global Opportunity, this means it gets back its $5 million initial investment, along with profits of $8 million. Remember, $2 million already has been paid out to the general partner as a carried interest. The general partners at Rock Street brag about getting 3x, three times a gross return on the deal. The limited partners in Rock Street also are happy, but are aware that their own overall return is less because of the carried interest and other fees that the general partner has taken out. They also know that this is just one deal in a large collection of investments that are done by the fund, and they hope that the other deals work out as well. If the deals don't work out as well, then the general partner who took out this carried interest may have to face what's called a clawback and recontribute some of the profit back to the private equity fund. The actual formula for determining the principal amount that gets paid out to the partners and the profits that get paid out is something known as a waterfall. Over the life of a fund, which can last as long as 10 to 15 years, the general partners of the $1 billion Rock Street Fund gradually make and then exit all of their investments in the collection of portfolio companies. One investment may be held for 8 years. One might be held for only 9 months. It's a quick flip of the original investment. Eventually, all the investments go through what are called liquidity events, and all the cash proceeds are returned to the partners in the limited partnership in an agreed-upon profit-sharing formula. Some private equity firms actually will distribute profits to the limited partners in the form of publicly traded stock. So if one of the investments went public, they might make an in-kind distribution of those shares out to the investors. This might present problems when the value of the shares decline after they are distributed to the investors. Although there are many different formulas for waterfalls, here's how a waterfall commonly used in the United States works. It's often called a deals realized to date waterfall. When a deal is exited, cash proceeds become available, and these are distributed in a certain priority that's set by the limited partnership agreement. Some of the proceeds are held in reserve. Then, if there's any more cash available, the limited partners are reimbursed for their original investment in the deal. Then, if there's anything left, the proceeds might be used to pay back the limited partners for capital that's used in any deal on that has been written off. In other words, a bad deal that's gone bust. Then, if there's any cash remaining after that, it's used to pay the limited partners for any management fees that they've paid out to the general partner. And then, if there's any cash left after that, the limited partners are paid until they've received a preferred return on investments that they've already made. In most funds today, the preferred return is anywhere from 8 to 12% per year. After this point, if there's anything remaining, the general partner gets to keep the 20% of the net proceeds, which is known as the carried interest. At the end of a fund's life, as I mentioned earlier, a general partner may be subject to what is commonly called a clawback if it turns out that they've overpaid themselves. In other words, if it turns out the GP has actually taken out 21% of the fund's profits after all the investment returns have been calculated, it may be on the hook to pay that 1% back to the limited partners. This can be painful and even impossible if, for example, any of the general partners in question already have spent the money, died, gone through a divorce, or left the firm and gone elsewhere. To avoid these painful clawbacks, some waterfall formulas require that the general partner put the profits, or some of the profits, into an escrow, where the carried interest is temporarily put sort of in a lockbox until a better picture of the fund's performance is known in the future. Private equity funds also charge fees that can materially impact the net return of the limited partner. Typically, a management fee of about 2% of committed capital is usually charged to the limited partner. These fees are designed to pay for the operations of the private equity firm. But for well-established firms with large funds, these fees have gone beyond paying to keep the lights on, so to speak, and really result in tremendous sources of profit and wealth to the general partners. An additional source of fee income to a general partner comes in the form of what is described as a transaction fee or a deal fee. These fees usually see the GP charge its own portfolio company for services rendered. Anyway, private equity funds are complex, but an enormous source of cash for investing in portfolio companies. If you're interested in learning more about investing in private equity funds, or if you'd like to know how private equity funds can invest in your portfolio company, call us at Odin Feldman and Pittleman at 703-218-2100 or visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
You're listening to Blueprint for Wealth with Wayne Zell. Learn how to better prepare for your future when Blueprint for Wealth returns in a moment.
A Legal Minute with Wayne Zell.
One of the most popular and effective estate planning and asset protection strategies is to use a life insurance trust to hold one or more policies on the life of either parent. An important purpose of this trust is to exclude the proceeds of a policy from estate tax. Simply put, if you own an insurance policy on your life, the proceeds are subject to estate tax. If your total property exceeds the exemption amount, 35% or more of the policy proceeds can be lost to estate tax. That means on a $1 million policy, $350,000 plus in estate taxes. When a policy is held by a trust, the cash value and proceeds also are protected from potential lawsuits and claims. A portion of family savings can be transferred to the trust each year. Amounts invested in the policy are permitted favorable tax treatment. If you'd like to know more about life insurance trusts, give us a call at 703-218-2100.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. If you have questions for Wayne, you can email him at radio@ofplaw.com or call him at 703-218-2100. Now back to your host, Wayne Zell.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Emily Richards.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for coming. You're my specially guest.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Emily is founder and president of Sade Clarity, which oversees business development, directs creative initiatives, and formulates strategy for Sade's client base. She's a fitness guru, she runs marathons, and she is a self-proclaimed health nut and embraces the importance of a life balance in body, mind, and spirit. I think that's a great philosophy to have, Emily. And her goal is to lead the charge with her hand-selected team to help bring health, wellness, and balance to individuals and corporations. Prior to founding Sade Clarity, Richards was president of Drew Consulting, a boutique strategic marketing firm that provided traditional and strategic marketing, public relations, and advertising expertise to firms ranging from small startups to Fortune 250 companies. Emily holds a BA in public relations from Auburn University and an MBA from Pace. So, are you from this area originally?
Actually, no. I grew up in the Gulf Coast area.
I don't hear the accent.
Well, after college, I took a job with a Fortune 250 that took me up and down the East Coast.
Okay. So and you acquired our accent as you went up and down the East Coast.
Well, I wouldn't be so eloquent with that. And when I got to New York, they basically said, drop it or leave. So job security made me drop it.
No, they don't say it Mobile, do they?
They do say Mobile, although a lot of people say mobile, but it's not.
I thought they said the people I've talked. Maybe it is Mobile.
Well, right. Now you got it.
I got it. I went to college down south, but not as far south as you did. So you came up here. What year and what did you do when you came up here?
Sure. The journey started in 2003. I took a job with a Fortune 250 company, like I said, and started here. And then it took me up to New York and then back here where I landed in 2007 in a regional role and have stayed here ever since.
So is this your new home?
It is. It's a good balance between the true Northeast and the deep South.
You're right. It is. It's sort of right in between. When did you start Sade Clarity? When did the business start up and why did you start it up?
Conceptually, it started in 08, and it took about two and a half years to actually build out the methodology. So when we started this venture, we realized that there was going to have to be some type of funding for it, and we wanted to be able to bootstrap it and keep control. So knowing that, I opened a small consulting boutique that you mentioned before that basically was a bread and butter to support this harebrained venture at the time.
Harebrained. But is it really a dream of yours? Is it something that you had this vision, obviously?
Yes. And quite honestly, it started when I was in corporate America. I had entered the workforce. I was balanced. I was running marathons. I was eating well. And that quickly digressed to 60-plus-hour work weeks, multiple happy hours. And so it just was an unhealthy...
Is that part of the work week? Or the happy hours considered part of the work week? I've always tried to figure that out when you're counting the 60 hours.
No, add that on top of the 60.
Right.
But quite honestly, I thought, you know what, if I was just doing this for a couple of years, I can't imagine what people that were doing it 40-plus years were feeling. And seeing within my firm trying the attempt to create a wellness program that just wasn't very effective, I thought that there was a huge opportunity to come and be effective, create programs that actually change lives and bring back balance.
That sounds great. So why did you start your own business and not join somebody else who might be doing the same thing?
Oh, a couple of reasons. One, I joke, growing up, my mother used to play this game with me called The Boss, and she always let me be the boss. So I blame my mother for that mentality.
So you were always the boss from a very young age.
Well, and I tried that in my first interview, and it didn't go over so well. Some people say that entrepreneurs are made, but I'm a firm believer that they're born. And I think that if you have that passion and that desire to create your own vision, your own passion, then until you do it, it's always going to be in the back of your mind, kind of itching and nagging. So I always had that fire in me and decided to channel it into this.
Why workplace wellness of all professions? What inspired you to do that?
I've seen the benefit of health and nutrition in my own life, and I saw the incredible disconnect with the people within the firms that I was working with. I saw that they didn't even know where to start. They didn't have the tools, the resources to make small daily changes. Mm-hmm. And I thought that this was something that came naturally to me. I already had the business acumen to be able to build it, and so I brought in my partner, who was the expert in fitness and nutrition, and it was the perfect marriage, if you will. And we have evolved from there into creating this very robust, comprehensive program.
Give me some examples of things that you do for corporations that help them get better, help the employees live better, live more balanced lives.
It's very simple. We started with very complex, grandiose ideas, thinking that everybody wanted to the latest craze or the latest energy that surrounded health and wellness. And we found that really it was about bringing practicality back to life.
Okay.
So to answer your question, such things as coming in and doing lunch and learns about how to create healthy, quick meals when you have a crazy day, to bring in group exercise classes, particularly yoga and Pilates for people that have high stress. We have a chiropractor that comes in and she teaches the ergonomics of your desk, how to position your computer screen so that you minimize the tension in your shoulders and your neck.
Tremendous.
So it's simple things like that. But we also can get crazy and we can bring in acupuncturists for stress management.
Massage.
Massage
therapists.
Yes.
Those are great ideas. I like those. And so you provide programs for big companies and small companies alike.
Alike, yes. We've created a proprietary portal that really is our core. It allows us to virtualize all of the offerings so that whether you are working at a client office, a corporate office, if you're in your pink bunny slippers working from home, you have the opportunity to be engaged.
I wear pink bunny slippers. I do have them.
Really?
Sometimes I wear them. I'm not telling anybody when.
Please don't.
When I'm wearing them, but I do wear them. No, I'm just kidding. But that's neat. So the portal, what does the portal enable you to do? So if I'm working at home or I'm working in the office, mm-hmm. I can go in and create a nutrition program for myself? Is that essentially, that's one of the things that it might enable me to do? Or
yes, in a way. I would
plan
say
meals, caloric intake, you know, watch my cholesterol.
Well, it starts with a screening because we really need a baseline to understand and you to understand where your body and where your health level is starting. So we come in, we do an assessment, and then from there you have a login for the portal where it's your individualized dashboard. You can track your progress, yes, your caloric intake, caloric burn. You can track your BMI, your weight loss progress.
Body mass index, is that what that is?
You've got it right.
Okay.
Yes. And with regard to nutrition plans, we have plans that you can follow that you can modify, as well as daily workouts, daily recipe galleries.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there a cost to subscribing to the portal? Is that essentially how you all make your revenue and sustain the business?
Yes. So we typically have a PEPM model per employee per month to keep it simple.
Okay.
And we come in and we say, okay, company ABC, this is the core of our offerings. We recommend you start with this and then build out from what your employees say they need or want or what we suggest that they need.
I love this idea. I think I don't know how many professional service firms you're working with, but you know, I'm with a law firm. I think we ought to recommend that to them. I think it's a great idea.
It really is. And with people becoming much more sedentary.
Right. We're sitting behind a desk all day long.
Yes. And to get up and get moving and make small changes. And quite honestly, the impact on your families, too, is pretty significant because we think beyond just your cubicle. We think about the families and the children involved as well.
And it's not just nutrition or you know, diet and exercise, obviously, are two mm-hmm. major components. But aren't you teaching people how to balance their lives in terms of time? And
yes.
Time management and spending more time on things that they love doing.
Yes.
And less time on working and stressing out.
Absolutely. Two components that are critical that get swept under the rug are sleep and time management. And coming in and teaching practical application of how to get organized. You shouldn't be checking your email all day, every day. Clearly, you won't be productive if you do that. So simple things like that, we come in and really look at the full picture.
Wow. We're talking with Emily Richards, founder and president of Sade Clarity, which does corporate wellness programs and has a proprietary portal. Who are your primary customers?
I would say that for us, the easiest customers that we have are the white-collar companies that have people sitting at a desk. It's the easiest to virtualize. We also look for progressive companies that either get wellness or are at least open to it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, all companies need it. We're talking with a couple of maritime companies that are in the Gulf Coast area, and they have problems because the Coast Guards are pulling their seasoned captains because they have heart disease and they're overweight. And so the companies that have poor health need us just as much as the ones that already get it.
Right. Absolutely. So it's not just for those who are progressive thinking. It might be for the ones who may not be so progressive thinking.
Yes, absolutely.
What's been the biggest challenge you've had in growing your business to where it is today?
I joke with my business partner that we're in the wild, wild west of workplace wellness. It's a hot buzzword, but it's a relatively new term.
Right.
People don't really know what defines workplace wellness right now, even though thanks to the Healthy Workforce Act, there are some parameters.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have found is that when we go into a company, we have to educate them as much as we do sell the product. So our sales cycle is about 12 months.
Wow, that's a long sales cycle.
I think, coming from someone who has a sales cycle of 1 to 2 months, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
So we have to be very diligent in working our pipeline while also prospecting to backfill as we bring clients on.
How many people do you have working for you today?
We have about 6 to 7 people that are employed for Sade, and mm-hmm. then we have an affiliate base of about 18 to 20 affiliates. Our approach is that the best practitioners and experts in their respective fields, they need to come from the outside.
And they have their own practices and their own businesses. And
yes.
So why would they want to work for you?
Well, and it...
No, I'm just teasing.
No.
They would definitely want to work for you, but...
Well, no, it allows us to... For them to cultivate their
right.
business and their expertise and continually bring in fresh ideas that would probably get stale if they were within the confines of our organization.
Did you have a mentor when you were starting out your business, or as you were growing through your business, your business evolution?
Yes, my mentor started when I was still with my firm, the Fortune 250 firm,
right?
And it kind of came by accident. Some people seek out a mentor. I was not. I was one of those that I don't need one.
Right.
And it really found me. And if I was to pick him out from a crowd, his name is Don Eversole, I probably would not have identified him as being my mentor. But he is a seasoned entrepreneur. He believes in me. He believes in what I do. He respects me, and I respect him in return. And he provides significant, honest feedback on anything that I throw out there. And I think that ability to not have to be vulnerable with someone, I get that sense when I hire people and I know that I'm paying them and I'm paying them to tell me that I'm great and wonderful.
Right.
It just doesn't have the same effect. So I'm very, very grateful and a huge advocate of mentorship.
Of having a mentor. So you would say it's valuable for an entrepreneur to have a mentor then?
Absolutely. Entrepreneurship is a rocky, long, lonely road. And sometimes you need to have that support in your back pocket to call on a really, really down day.
What words of advice would you give to the listeners who are thinking of starting a new business?
Run the other way.
Oh, come on.
No. I think that you need to decide how hard you think it's going to be, multiply it times 10, and then multiply it again 10 more times.
Well, it's not that bad, is it? Oh, come on.
No. It's invigorating and passionate and quite wonderful, but you do. It takes tenacity. It takes chutzpah.
Yep.
Thank you.
Don't say chutzpah.
and just the go-get-em attitude that you're going to get this done by hell or high water.
So tenacity is what really has brought you here.
Absolutely.
We're talking to Emily Richards, and she's president and founder of Sade Clarity. Emily, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Absolutely. They can contact us by email. They can contact me directly, emily.richards@sadeclarity.com. They can also contact us by phone at 703-850-1785, and can also visit us on the web at www.sadeclarity.com.
That's Sade.
Yes, correct.
Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thank you.
It's been great having you, and thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth. Tune in next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Wayne Zell and Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will be back next Saturday morning at 10 a.m. with your Blueprint for Wealth right here on 1500 AM.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent